Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Farrell-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. And today we have an amazing guest, Amy Louise Rich. She's a principal at Deloitte's Human Capital Practice. And we are going to be talking about the importance of organizational culture in M&A. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
No, and I know we've been trying to get you on a couple of times, and it's just been delayed and delayed, but it's okay. All that matters is that you're here now. It's all right.
Sorry about it, but I promise you it was because I was off exploring the world after being pent up for too long.
And so where did you go in the world? Share with the audience.
You know what? I had the opportunity to catch up my European travels. I was in Spain, Italy, and France just the last couple of weeks. And having not been to Europe in a long time, it was great to get back out there.
Oh, my gosh. I love Italy, and I love the south of France. So... okay, I'm jealous. So good. We're going to end this conversation today because I'm jealous. No, I'm just kidding. And it's all good. It's all good. No, it's all beautiful, beautiful areas. So, you know, we're always going to be talking about the role of culture. You know, culture is, by definition, a very large word. It covers so much area. So for the audience, could you at least give a little bit of what you see or define culture to be and what that applies to, especially when we're talking about business strategy and M&A?
Absolutely. And you know, I've heard a lot of different definitions over the years, but the one that resonates with me the most is quite simply, culture is the way that work gets done around an organization. I find that when cultures are working well, they are tightly aligned to the current business strategy. And it's not something that is just passively allowed to evolve, right? Intentional choices are made about how work should be done to enable a business strategy. And that is modeled through leaders and employees and the systems and the processes that you design. But again, quite simply, how is the work getting done around here?
Sure. And I'm sure you work with a lot of organizations that have so many different cultures. Who do you think is the biggest driver of that culture in most of the organizations that you see? Is it the C-suite? Is it the middle management? Is it the line workers? Tell me how you think that all aligns.
So I absolutely believe that culture starts at the top, right? I think that the CEO sets a tone and the C-suite needs to follow that. That said, it must all work in harmony. When I talk to clients about when transformations have been successful or integrations in the case of M&A have achieved their goals, it is because things are working in harmony, right? I spoke earlier about culture strategy being aligned to business strategy. That's a must. The second thing is leaders' actions and words model what they are, you know, what you are trying to achieve, but it is brought to life through employees' behaviors that are recognized and rewarded by systems and processes. So absent any one of those four things, the culture might shift briefly, but it will not be a sustained change or transformation.
One of the challenges we saw certainly during the COVID period over the last few years is that it put a different type of strain on culture. And there was amazing shifts in industry, in people's ability to work from home or work at work or different ways that people looked at. And culture came under a really big microscope during that period. What do you think was the biggest thing that you have seen as a change of what worked and what didn't work that you could share with the audience today?
I think it's tightly tied to a concept around inclusion, right? And so as we flipped to a virtual world, folks struggled with creating an environment that was truly inclusive. And not everybody's great in the video realm. Not everybody's comfortable on video. So leaders needed to adapt to the wide array of employee preferences and being thoughtful and intentional about how and when folks were included or excluded, you know, as appropriate. In messaging. And I think that's one of those things that really, you know, is talked about a lot, but not thought about as intentionally as it needs to be.
We're talking with Amy Louise Rich. She's the principal at Deloitte Human Capital Practice. You're listening, of course, to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo. And don't forget, you can listen to the HR Power Hour on all major podcast channels. Amy, what drew you to M&A and the culture to work specifically this way? You know, what drew you to it?
What drove me to it? You know, my professional background is diverse. I spent 14 years with the Walt Disney Company. I had the opportunity to work with the Los Angeles Police Department as an officer for a while. And I think it's the sum total of all of those things. At Disney, I had the opportunity to be around transactions and see things, how they were handled and the importance of what was said and whether actions aligned with what was shared. At the police department, I joined shortly after the Rodney King riots and believed that I could be a force of positive change as the police department looked to shift. And I recognized that, you know, I could not do that in isolation. One officer was not going to change the image overall. It required a real emphasis. And so the experiences and the exposures to those organizations just led me to realize this is something that I wanted to help others do and do well. And then I can think of no better time to do that than when an integration is happening, because you have two companies coming together who need to figure out how they're going to work well to deliver on the deal's value and promise.
You know, culture, as you know, aligns very well with business strategy.
It should.
Well, that's kind of my point. I find that, especially during the last few years, people became more tactical than strategic. And the strategy side of the business, albeit very important, took a back seat to the daily transactional nature of life as we dealt with it. And you see a lot of organizations moving back towards trying to get, well, say their house in order and trying to look at strategy as it moves forward and how that aligns with their culture. As you're looking at mergers and acquisitions, which have certainly seemed to be picking up, or maybe that's just the perception out there that they're picking up, what do you think, how does that align together, I guess, is a better way of me phrasing it?
So the good news is that most of my clients that have been undertaking M&A deals have recognized that culture is an important thing to contemplate, but many still don't know how to do that and to make it a focus, not just in the planning stages, but even in screening potential targets and then long after, right? Because I think folks put time and energy around a deal and then they think it's done because it's closed and it's, you know, a month or two post-close. But that's just not the reality of how people work. And so when we've been talking with clients, we've been advising them to do early public screens, right? There's a lot of very helpful information that's shared in public forums that can and should be reviewed. It's what the companies say about themselves, their mission, their vision, and values, and how does that resonate with a buying company? It's what are employees saying in forums? And a lot of times I hear, well, aren't employee forums just the vocal minority? Well, does that mean they shouldn't be listened to? That's an important voice that ought to be contemplated. And it's very revealing about what the challenges may be in taking on a deal. And so it helps, doing that early screening helps you really look at and plan your resources and frankly, your messaging. Imagine coming out at the time you announce a deal and saying the first priority we have is to address the cybersecurity risk that exists here. And that was the thing about which employees were most vocal in a forum. Talk about building trust right off the bat from the time you announced the deal. It just shows that you listened to what folks were out there saying. And I think that, you know, at a time when you're on borrowed trust is very important.
So all this still applies to just organizations in transition. You don't have to be in a merger or an acquisition to be going through these type of strategies. For an organization that's thinking about even transitioning from one owner to the next owner, a family business or a business where you have, you know, maybe a succession plan already in place, how do you manage this challenge between the two different type of leaders, the two different types of belief structures, generational thought processes? I know I just asked you a massive question, but you know, how do you think that all through and put that all together?
You know, some of it has to do with the reality of what's going on. So if it's a natural generational transfer in a family situation, I would say to the ascending leader that it becomes important to listen to and share what it is you've heard in the way of stories that have been so pivotal in shaping you and your belief system. In a hostile takeover situation, I just would say, let's not be disingenuous, right? This is a situation where folks aren't happy and getting out there and pretending that you care about what happened in the past is only going to erode all confidence in what you're trying to do and make people think that you're paying lip service. So I guess I would say it absolutely depends on what the nature of the transition is, how I guide people to think about what gets said. But I will tell you that in most cases where it's a positive experience and it's intended to be that, digging in and learning about the prior experiences, what helped the target get to where they are and become who they are, caring about that and conveying that in the stories and the early messaging builds a lot of trust. It shows that you cared about what it was that led them there. And then, you know, talk a little bit about how that parallels or doesn't the journey you've been on today.
You know, we talked a little bit about certainly the transition from the COVID era, where we have more people at home, working from home and working remotely. And there is a lot of conversation, and we're going to talk about this in another segment, but I'll segue in, where, you know, culture has been strained by people at home, and they haven't figured it out yet. As I have here at C-Suite talk about all the time, like, I can't figure out how to get people to feel the same way. And so in this particular case, when you're talking about an M&A, how does that affect it when people aren't as connected or may feel not as connected to the organization because they're away, another state, another place for that area?
Yeah. You know, first of all, I will tell you, I have advice and thoughts about it, but the reality is that not enough time has gone by for me to prove out that the things that I have suggested have worked. But in advising clients about what they take on and when, I am always quick to go back to what I describe as the employee hierarchy of needs. And we plot that against a probable timeline for the deal. So at day one, my focus there is really about answering the fundamentals that allow employees to stay productive. Do I have a job? Is my role changing? Are you tinkering with the benefits I have been relying upon for my children to get cancer treatment in the short run? Those are the fundamentals that if you don't answer them, you're going to have no trust, you're going to have unproductive employees, and you can forget anything about culture building. Once those answers have been provided, proven, validated that you were speaking truth and didn't tinker with it, then and only then, in my experience, are employees ready to begin climbing that, right? That's when they become more curious about the company's stated vision, mission, and values, and how that comes to life, where they're finally ready to watch what's being done in addition to what's being said. And then when you can say, and here's your place within it, that's when employees begin to build a sense of affiliation. They go, this company's vision and values mirror my own beliefs, and I can see that they are going to invest in my growth over time and for years. This is a place I can feel and be loyal to. Whether that is remote or whether that is in person, is a matter of company strategy, business strategy, and an employee voice. And I can tell you perspectives on that are continuing to evolve. But I do see the most successful companies creating an environment where people want to come together, right? I'm not hearing a ton of mandated. It's creating this environment where when I come in, I get a lot out of it. I get the time with my leaders. I have fun connecting with my colleagues. It's a reimagined workplace.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense when you really think about it, that it is such a broad question, but people are always about what's in it for me first.
Of course.
And who isn't? And we're going to talk more about that when we come back to break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back. Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored and thank our sponsoring law firms of Verrill, Sheehan Finney, Jackson Lewis, and McLean Middleton. Our partner sponsors of Healthcare Purchase Alliance and Strategic HR. Want to be a sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say, we want to be an HR Power Hour sponsor.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y. Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go fish that!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and welcome to the HR Power Hour Educational HR Radio. Today, our guest is Amy Louise Rich. She's a principal at Deloitte's Human Capital Practice, and we're talking about the importance of organizational culture in M&As. Let me ask just a general question to you, Amy. What can the listeners, the HR professionals, C-suite owners do to be proactive about managing the culture in general?
Yeah. In the last segment, I talked about on deals, making sure that you do your diligence even before you make the deal. So that's one thing that I would say. The second thing I would say is it's important to recognize this is not, does not need to be an HR owned issue. And in fact, when I think, when I've seen clients be most successful, they've found passionate sponsors from the business who want to be an active part of shaping this. I have one client in particular who identified one of their technology leads who had lived this and breathed this, and that became my, my client counterpart. And as a result, the work they did to shape this took deep meaning. It was rooted in specific business moments for him. And they brought it to life in that way. And so it's important that HR be a part of it, but I think it goes beyond HR. And so finding that right mix. And then the last thing I will say is recognizing that while you can do a lot on a transaction for culture, culture is a thing that needs to be actively managed for all time. And so every time you are reimagining your business strategy or making adjustments, doing that follow-on work to say, how does this mean we need to show up differently for each other, is a logical follow-on. And so recognizing that you will be making adjustments and that it is a living, vital thing is as important as anything in managing it.
Well, while we're talking about some of those transactional pieces and keeping in mind that you said it last segment, and I think you just said it recently, is how big trust is as a part of this and how important it is that the company is viewed, the employees are viewed, the leadership is viewed in a trusted way. And in today's day and age, that's not only in the terms of vision or mission or values that you put up on the wall or that you believe, but it's also in social media, on Glassdoor and other areas that are out there. And we're talking about reputation, not only of the company, but of the people involved in the company and how fast that can turn. There's so many amazing stories, positive and negative, of how social media has helped or hurt businesses in a huge way through these type of things. When you think about that, what comes to mind for an organization of how to make sure that they say the things they should say about themselves, and also that they build that trust consistently throughout that platform?
One of the most important things that you can do is give words meaning, define them, right? So organizations will talk about the importance of collaboration as an example. And what that means to people is wildly different. In one company, it could be that I walked down the hall and I had a quick chat with you, David, and I vetted my idea and it was great, and we moved forward and I collaborated. But in another, it's going to be getting 15 people in a room toiling with data. And, you know, language matter, words matters, and making sure that you understand what the word actually means is so important. So when I hear leaders throw out big words like customer centricity or agility, I am listening for the fast follow on what is actually intended, because otherwise people are going to take these little sound bites and it can show up on social media and they can add their own spin to it. And that can be both positive and negative. It's just one of those things where we need to be really precise in sharing that information, recognizing that it might get broadcast.
Well, let me take that to the next logical question, is that if that information is taken incorrectly, posted, put out there in either a general forum, just in a public meeting in terms of internally, or on social media, what can organizations really do about the reputational risk of that and the monetary risk that could come with that?
Right, David, I am no PR agency, right? I don't have experience in crisis management. But if I'm to offer my own opinion on this, I will say heartfelt, thoughtful, and reflective apologies, I think, can be very well received. You know a good apology and a sincere one when you hear it. And I think that today's leaders, when they stop, reflect, and share what they learned in the moment, I think that can, honestly, I think a lot of companies, a lot of people, leaders, should be judged more for the grace with which they handle a mistake than they are for the mistake itself, but only if it's authentic. And so getting out there and sharing a fast apology is nowhere near as impressive as going, you know what? This is what I heard. This is what I learned. These are the specific steps that I am taking to remedy it. And if there is more I can do, I'd love to hear it.
We're talking, of course, with Amy Louise Rich. She's a principal at Deloitte's Human Capital Practice. And we're talking about the importance of organizational culture in M&A. You know, you said something very interesting there, which is a calm, relaxed reaction that is authentic and genuine. And we do all know when it's not authentic, you know, and there's a feel of it. I think what's interesting is that it's so quick to lose your authenticity and so quick to respond when the emotion is kicked in. And I'm sure you've seen probably countless deals that have had gone either sideways or, you know, gone askew because of an emotion of someone in the organization that has created a problem. Maybe the owner, maybe, you know, maybe the buyer or whoever it is. How do you keep that in check when their emotional intelligence isn't as strong as it should be?
Well, I have the gift of being fairly blunt, right? So I don't struggle with saying what needs to be said in those moments. Admittedly, I do them more behind the scenes than I do on a public radio show, but I am willing to say perhaps what others are reluctant to do so. Beyond that, I will look at those who seem to have more gravitas in an organization. So I can think of one CEO who had brilliant vision and brilliant direction, but was not good in large group forums. And so as I thought about how do I create more memorable moments, once I realized that, I thought about who is going to be best able to convey this message in the way that we want it to be received. And then the conversation became, can I put that person forward in this moment? I think they will connect better with the group you are speaking of. And that comes from having built trusted relationships over time. And in M&A deals, you don't always have as much time as you would like, but you can fairly quickly see by listening to prior conversations whether somebody's going to get up there and be direct and business-oriented and unemotional, or whether somebody's going to be able to connect with an audience. And I will say the combination of the two can be incredibly powerful. Somebody who gets up there, articulates a clear strategy and a path to get there, and then that fast follow-up with somebody who says, and this is what we anticipate is the emotional experience or the journey we're going to go on together on how we'll do it, can be very powerful.
How much does ego get in the way in these deals?
A ton. I mean, ego is everything. We all have one and it gets in our way sometimes, and sometimes it's an incredible tool if we have some humility balanced with it. I do find that most folks are willing to listen to the direct message when said in plain English and when shared with the consequences that will follow if there's a misstep taken.
If an organization or an individual in an organization really isn't bought in and really isn't, you know, is the cog in the wheel, as we like to call it sometimes. How do you either move that to the side, or how do organizations recognize that it's time to either say goodbye or to move them to a different role? And how hard is that?
A lot of my clients will talk with me about doing culture work, right? I want to do a real diagnostic and understand where we are today and where we go in the future. And I maybe sell less work than I could, because I'm very quick to point out that there's not a culture assessment out there that's going to change your culture, right? There's no magic wand for doing this. And so you can do a great job of admiring who you are and how you're different, but that is only going to undermine confidence in doing anything. So if that group isn't prepared to step up, share the results, and talk about what they're doing to drive change, then don't bother in the first place. Just don't even bring it up, because otherwise you're just going to shoot yourself in the foot and create a bigger problem.
I think that's a powerful statement, to be honest with you, because, and probably not something that people want to hear sometimes, right? Because it's the will of whomever, or the belief that this is the best thing for your organization. And maybe it is if it's a product that is needed to, you know, provide something to another product that you have, or maybe it's more about the tool or the technology than it is about, quote unquote, some of the people around that. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but there is truth that sometimes it's really about acquiring something and not necessarily, and maybe the general talent around, but it's really about acquiring the thing that is going to happen. And that's, that happens all the time. But how do you make that where people understand that? Because that's hard when the thing is more important than them sometimes.
Well, I mean, if that is the case, I think you need to say it. But right up front, when talking with folks about what their culture strategy ought to be, I'm talking about what the business rationale is, right? Are you making this buy because you need the talent that you are acquiring? Are you making this buy because you need a particular product and it's a defensive move? What you say and choose to do around culture is entirely dependent on why you're making the deal in the first place, how you intend to create value. If this is about my animation division isn't working because we're in a bygone era and haven't made the technology bets, but this company we're acquiring has made unbelievable investments and created an environment where they can cultivate innovation and we have all of the best tools, well, then I need to figure out a way to take what I've just bought and have it permeate my legacy organization. And that may mean making tough choices from the buying organization to make exits about people who aren't willing to get on board. And I don't think you can mince words in that regard.
You know, it's interesting, and we're going to talk about this in the next segment, is about the generational means of Gen Z and some of the other aspects, which have a total different belief society plays in businesses, which you don't see in, not that it isn't important to other generations, want to be clear, but they view it differently. Let's just put it that way. So, you know, as we think about this, there's a lot to it, isn't there? This is not just simply, culture is a big piece of the M&A, isn't it? At the really beginning and all the way through.
All the way through and in perpetuity. I can't say it enough, right? Yes, the transaction might be the catalyst for it, but if done well, it just becomes part of the organizational refresh, right? And I'm reimagining my strategy. I'm making some shifts. What are the fundamental shifts we need to make in the ways of working? And then how do I drive that? How do I change the processes to recognize people who are stepping up and exemplifying what we need?
Great advice from Amy Louise Rich. And we're going to be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
If you're single and not dating on Match, then listen up. Match is not only number one in first dates, but second dates too. In fact, they've surveyed over 5,000 U.S. singles to get the top tips and advice when it comes to dating. Here we go. You want to impress a first date? Put your phone away. 45% of singles would be turned on if you visibly turned off your phone during a date. This is my issue, but the Mets are on it. It's like the eighth inning, and they go to the bullpen. Millennials are 270% more likely than other generations to be turned on by someone who is binge-watching the same TV shows like Stranger Things or OA. Singles flirt everywhere, but flirting at the bar, in the laundromat, or at the gym are the most successful. I like to just say, hey, can I fold your clothes? Oh, see, now I get to I don't know, but I would like to fold your clothes. Dating can be difficult, so if you're not using Match, you're missing out. Start searching and connecting for free today at Match.com. That's Match.com, Match.com, MATCH.com.
With Zillow, you're not just looking for a house. You're looking for the bathroom where you'll give your kids shampoo mohawks. The bonus room you'll turn into a gym and work out in every single day, starting tomorrow. You're looking for hardwood floors worthy of your signature dance move, the glitchy robot.
You're not just looking for a house. You're looking for a place for your life to happen. And whether buying or renting, Zillow makes it easy with simple smart search features, photos, video walkthroughs, and more. Zillow, find your way home.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopRex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than 7 generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across 7 offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. Please remember, you can reach the HR Power Hour on most national podcast channels, as well as, of course, you can go to hrpowerhour.com. And of course, can listen to WLOB Radio 100.5 FM. We're talking with Amy Louise Rich today. She's a principal at Deloitte's Human Capital Practice. And of course, we're talking about the importance of organizational culture in M&As. You know, before we get started with the third section here, how long have you been at Deloitte?
Nearly 14 years.
14 years, so a rookie. Okay, no, just kidding, of course, just kidding. What do you like most about the organization and the work you do?
What I love most about the organization is that I have not stopped climbing a very steep learning curve in 14 years. I don't know that what that says about where I started when I began. What I am grateful for is that I know that if I want to, I can continue to climb an equally steep learning curve and well into my retirement. And that's been pretty fantastic. And I would be remiss if I didn't say, the sense of investment that my company has in me and that growth, right? I feel supported every day, and that's how I know I'm where I belong.
Oh, that's awesome. We love to hear success stories and careers, right? It's a big part of, if you're not happy doing what you're doing, I always say that, you know, I own Career Management, I own the show. I say when it's 51% not fun is when I stop, right? 51%. Because at that point, it's not worth doing. Now, I'm not saying there aren't days. let's be very clear about that, okay? But in general, if every day is over 51%, then it's time to do something different.
I am very fortunate to have found work, my life's work, here at Deloitte, doing something that has incredible meaning for me, because it just means that nearly every single day, I am jumping out of bed with enthusiasm and gusto. In fact, when I hear from my teams, they speak about this infectious enthusiasm, and it's just frankly because I'm doing what I was meant to do.
It's awesome. That's, again, listen to that, everyone out there. If you are not jumping out of bed, well, all right, getting out of bed. Can we just say getting out of bed and enjoying what you're doing? You really need to think about that. It's very, very true. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the generational differences and how Gen Z is changing the way M&As are thought about, just organizational culture is thought about. Why don't we just start with the organizational culture? Their ability to look at the society in a different way that any other generation has looked at it is quite amazing. What's your take on that?
Yeah. Look, Gen Z is creating an imperative that did not previously exist for organizations, and particularly organizations and M&A deals. When we think about the fact that 94% of Gen Z is expecting that companies will take a stand on society and on social issues, and I've seen statistics that say upwards of 90% are more willing to buy products that benefit society, that's not something that can be ignored. And it really created a challenge for me to think a little differently about the work that I do. It's led me to ask myself, well, one, how are we creating a more diverse integration team, right? This is an opportunity for us to create moments and get to know talent and bring different voices to the table to imagine how these two companies should come together. So we need to be intentional about that. But just bringing together a diverse team doesn't mean that you've equipped them to work together. And so now we are building into the training and the development opportunities to learn about how to work together. That's things like unconscious bias. That's things like bridge building. It's business chemistry kinds of things, just things that equip people to work well and differently together. So that as you have these more diverse teams, they're understanding how to avoid groupthink and bring these ideas to bear. We'd be crazy to ignore it. I'm mindful on the topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion. There's also this idea of what are the commitments that the company's making to external partners out there, right? Do we have the opportunity? One thing in a deal is economies of scale and what are our suppliers doing? Well, do we similarly have the opportunity to make an investment in our suppliers to help them diversify and be intentional there? That's all stuff that we weren't thinking about a few years ago, that generational expectations and societal realities have created the opportunity for us to do.
And of course, talent retention today is a big, big challenge in today's market. The reputation and brand of a company can have huge implications to their ability to recruit and retain top talent. How do you see that being, give me your take on that. Deb, fix that up.
Well, it ties back to something we were touching on earlier, that sense of belonging that we ultimately need to create for folks, right? A sense of belonging can lead to, the stats show an estimated 167% increase in net promoter scores. And I think more importantly, a 50% reduced turnover risk. And those things happen in the small moments, David, right? It's that somebody's caring for an aging parent and we showed up and made it possible for them to focus. We can't ignore that. And organizations that collectively focus on culture will have higher levels of retention. That's what the data show us. And again, it's not because it's a stagnant thing. It's because it's a real thing that evolves as the business strategy changes, as the world changes. It's actively managed and it lives and breathes. And when you make those shifts, the generations coming up see that and react and feel listened to and heard and see a sense of it and see a place for a long time.
Well, I know you brought the stat that it costs about $100,000 to recruit for a role externally. That's a big chunk of change. And that can make a huge impact on a relatively mid or even large organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would go so far as to say that it is cheapest to focus your dollars on building a stronger culture than it is to replace people who are leaving. And that goes right back to what I was talking about earlier, right? When I'll be honest, when I first joined Deloitte, I assumed it was going to be a transitional role, but it was because I felt so invested in that I kept renewing my commitment here, right? And it's why I now realize that I will be here until my retirement. And I'm excited about that. As long as I continue to feel like somebody cares about my growth, that the culture continues to mirror my own beliefs, and we evolve and grow as the world changes, I will feel a sense of belonging. And I'd like to think that those who share my values will feel the same way.
Do you feel Gen Z and even maybe Gen Y are not as initially connected to organizations, and they feel like jumping or boomeranging is okay because they go get more experience somewhere else and then maybe come back? Do they worry less about that, or do they worry more about being comfortable where they are?
I like the way you said that right at the end. I think folks worry about being comfortable where they are. Sure, early in our careers, we're all out there interested in making moves and growing rapidly. There's a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm. Sometimes that is met by moving between companies, and other times that is met by moving swiftly within a company and having myriad experiences. I spent 14 years at the Walt Disney Company before I arrived at Deloitte. And one of the reasons that I did that is because I worked in four business units and had, I don't know how many bosses. And no, not all of my bosses were wonderful, but most of them were. And I always took something from them. So I felt very fluid. And I think that's it, is I think this generation, not dissimilar to others, is looking for diverse and enriching experiences. And the companies that create that as part of their employee value proposition are probably keeping talent better. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say you also have to compensate well. People need to be fairly valued.
Yeah, but as you know, compensation is like number five or six on the list. Correct. Right? You have to have compensation that is equitable and people feel good about. But excessive compensation is not necessary and people will jump only to find out that it's not necessarily as green on the other side of that fence in terms
exactly.
All right. Well, we're talking with Amy Louise Rich, and we are talking about the importance of organizational culture in M&A, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In a recent survey, investors shared what they felt were the greatest threats to their retirement. It's no surprise the most common threats include stock market volatility, economic uncertainty, conflict in the Middle East. Unfortunately, there are many threats beyond your control that can affect your retirement savings. At Goldco, a leader in precious metals, the team believes one way to protect your investment portfolio is with physical gold and silver. Goldco will send you a free 1 ounce silver American Eagle coin, and all you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. No obligation, 100% free. Call 855-971-2006 to get your free silver American Eagle coin.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and vero-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio. And today we had a great show. Last segment here with Amy Louise Rich, principal at Deloitte's Human Capital Practice. And of course, we've been talking about the importance of organizational culture in mergers and acquisitions, or M&A. Amy, as we wrap up the show today, if somebody is listening and says, you know, what's the big takeaways from today? Maybe they didn't hear the full show. Maybe they were partially listening, whatever most people do when they're listening to podcasts. What are the three things that they should take away from this show and either act upon or think about?
Yeah. When taking on a deal, start early, but, you know, take advantage of the publicly available information and think about the potential impact of making some moves or saying the wrong thing, but recognize that you need to stay the course. Don't make culture a thing that you do just until close. It is a thing that you are going to need to actively manage for all time. The second thing I would say is, if you are going to drive sustained culture change, four things must work in concert. Culture strategy must be aligned to business strategy. Your leaders' actions and words need to reflect what you say your culture strategy is. Your employees' behaviors also need to do that. And the systems that you have in place must recognize and reward employees for behaving and working together in the way you envision. Absent those four things, you will not make a shift. And then the last thing I will say is, you can't view this as a one and done. Yes, the transaction is the catalyst for you making a shift right now. But to your point, a lot of this is about all kinds of transitions. And so you need to be constantly asking yourself, how do we evolve?
That's great advice. And, you know, Amy, since obviously you've been traveling all around the world, any place you're going to next?
Portugal. I am headed to Portugal in August. That has been on my bucket list. And I'm very much looking forward to it. And then I think 2023 will be the year of Asia. That's my least travel. So Europe this year and Asia next year.
No, that's fabulous. And of course, it's always fun to travel the globe, and the same problems everywhere, though. Same cultures, the same in business everywhere. May have its own issues within the country, but it's still about people, is it not?
That's exactly right. It all boils down to people and tapping into the intrinsic side of things and bringing out the very best in them. So I think taking that time to get to know them is everything.
If somebody wanted to reach out to you, how could they reach you at your organization?
Oh, quite simply, you can reach me via email at arich@deloitte.com, and I'll look forward to hearing from folks.
No, that's great. And I appreciate you being a guest today. It's awesome to have you on the show. Your organization does great work, and we appreciate you being a guest today.
Can't thank you enough for the invitation, and I very much enjoyed getting to know you a little bit over the last hour, David.
No, we had a great time. I loved it.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.